You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome one and all. Oh, we're back. We're back after a week off. Hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July, Independence Day. Ours was wonderful. We went to the big town of Bonduelle for their fireworks show, and it was wonderful. The kids loved it. And I hope you and your families had a great 4th of July as well. I'm going to get to the guest because this person is wonderful. She is a senator, the esteemed senator. And my friend and yours, former host of the show as well, Senator Kristen Dasler-Alfheim. How are you?
Hello, friends. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
How now? I have to ask. You know, if you watch The Crown, you know, or one of those shows, you understand like you are who you are. But then when you get elected, not The Crown wasn't elected, but like they become that becomes them. Mm-hmm. And even though it is temporary, that is who you are.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wear no matter what you're wearing. You know, how is that, has that changed anything? Any perspective? Any like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reality that, in fact, my neighbors were out the other day and Carrie Ann had walked over to say hello. And they're like, why are you never outside? Why do we never see Chris? And her response was very true. She goes, because she don't want to talk to people. Yeah. Because all day long, you are at all times prepared to interact, to answer questions. Some of them hard, some of them easy, but all day long. And there's a time in the day where I just need to stop. I just need to shut down, find my couch. Honest answer, take my bra off. You know? I mean, we're real people, you know, and it's a 24-hour-a-day operation. And so, I mean, I enjoy this. I think that I'm the right person, the right time to be in this.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't look at anything negative on there. But when I need to shut down, I need to shut down. And that's okay.
Because you still have your job as well, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you still.
Yeah, you know, there's magic in having, you know, ADD. And I got to tell you, I found the perfect balance right now. I mean, I enjoy my career. I've done well in business and I love my clients and I still get to take care of them. But there are days, especially through budget season, where my head is on a swivel.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 2 hours in this mission and then shoom, and then you turn the other direction and it's 2 hours in that transition and shoom, and you go back to the other one. And you just kind of bounce back and forth. I think for the first time in my life, when I go to bed, my brain is kind of tired and I'm ready to go to sleep, which means I'm at capacity.
yeah I know this. Last night I was up until like 11:30, 12:01. I couldn't shut it off.
It's hard.
I envy that.
There might be a little kicker in there to help me, but let's be honest.
But
it's true. There's so much, and you know, my clients enjoy that I'm involved. They know I'm a good person to do it, and you know, in Madison, they respect the fact that I still have a business run, and so it's all a matter of time blocking and management.
Yeah,
I have a calendar that has the equivalent of 6 calendars combined into it. And so everything is blocked weeks in advance as to where I need to be and what I need to be doing. And my business life calendar is blended in so that we make sure that everything gets the time that it needs due to probably, and a little personal time too.
How does family, I mean, you gotta make time for
the calendar exists for all. So
that's
again,
good.
my personal, my business and my political calendar are all melded into one so that it can be respectful of every piece that needs to be in there. And you know, family time is in there as well.
That's good for you. Now you said a little nugget in there, budget season. Deep breath. How was that? I've only heard stories.
Unbelievable.
Yeah?
I mean, I think my favorite word is unbelievable because it doesn't really imply good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, this is my first one, so it's a learning opportunity. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that coming in this one, again, maps matter. And this is the first half of the map change. And so that enters a new dynamic. So not only
talk about that.
Well, you know, half of the Senate came through elections last time. So the Senate Democrats increased their total by 4. And all 4 that came in are in competitive districts, extremely competitive districts. So, You have a strong, strong Democratic caucus in Madison. You now have four new voices coming in, along with one that was already there, which is Brad Paff. And so you have a little bit more purple involved with the blue, because we're all representing our constituency the best that we can in the way that we ran. And that in itself is a shift for the Democratic caucus. And I will tell you, I will be a fan of Diane Hesselbein for a very, very long time.
How come?
Because managing change is difficult. Managing personalities is difficult as it is. And when you have a group that has been together, locked in a corner because of the gerrymandering, that have had zero control, then we get a little bit of control back and now you have new voices. To manage through the change of a caucus in its overall makeup, in the first opportunity that the Democrats have to have any say whatsoever in a budget in a long, long time.
Yeah.
That takes skill. It takes courage.
This and is what, 2008?
Yeah. And she did it masterfully. I mean, truly.
Diane is a leader of the
Diane
the
is
Senate
a leader.
Caucus.
And I say leader with a capital L.
Okay. So, and how, I mean, don't divulge too much, but I do want to, how did that, what happened behind closed doors?
Well, I'm not even sure I know the rules. I know during the budget session, we're in a caucus, we don't get to talk about what's going on because you don't want to give away the negotiations. Yeah. But I will say that you know, we didn't even know what the governor had negotiated to with the Republicans until about 10 days before the budget was passed. None of it was disclosed. There were no negotiations with the Democrats and the Republicans until 10 days before. It was the governor working with them. And honestly,
governor with Republicans first?
Only with Republicans only until, again, the final 10 days.
And for people that are listening who, you know, are, oh, goody, you know, how could he not? That is because maps matter.
Maps matter.
That forces him to do that.
And again, I'm very respectful of Zach Madden and the governor. I think where they got the budget to in those negotiations was far better than we thought. It was far better than we thought he would get. But I think the reality, and this is my opinion, and I've shared this with the governor's team, I think that the governor could have utilized a different strategy. I think that he used the same strategy on this budget as he has for the two prior budgets.
Which was what?
Which was the Democrats have no leverage, so it's all up to him. And he did his best to play defense against the Republican budget. And that's what he did. Now, this budget, this cycle, with, again, half of our new maps in, there was leverage. Not a lot, but there was leverage in the Senate. And again, I think it's fair to say that a different strategy could have been utilized. If the leverage was known, then why not apply the leverage from the beginning as opposed to the end? And again, he's done a great job. He gets to do whatever he wants to do. But my opinion, and again, I've shared this, it's not a secret with his team. My opinion is I would have played that strategy differently.
So I sit down with the Democrats first and then go to the Republicans and say, listen, if you don't do this,
well, everybody, you know, kind of knew that the Senate Republicans were going to have a hard time. They were going to need a vote or two. And I think the assumption was that they would just come to a deal and one or two Democrats would get picked off. And to the credit of Mark Spreitzer, Senator Spreitzer, and Senator Hesselbein, they had our caucus pull together. And my answer was, Diane has my proxy. And all of us said that. In essence, the answer was, we have 15 no's until we're at the table to work and negotiate this deal. We are 15 no's. You are not going to pick off one of us that's purple or two of us that are purple. It's not going to work that way. And that, again, takes leadership.
Yeah.
It takes leadership. So we banded together as a caucus to say, no, we are going to expect more. And Diane went to the table and literally, again, first, give her credit, first Democrat there in a long time. Second, first woman there. And she is going head-to-head with Robin Voss. And you know he's had the run of the world for a very long time.
Yes.
And she not only held her own, she got far more, far more than he ever wanted to give up.
What are the things that she got that he didn't want to give up?
Everything. Well. So, I mean, I'll take it back about it. You know, in my opinion, there were only four options for this budget.
Yep.
One was to accept the Republican budget as it was. I mean, Tony's budget goes in and then it means nothing because they strip everything out back to base. So the worst option, in my opinion, was to go back to base, which would have been no budget whatsoever. That is what a few of the Senate Republicans were hoping for, because going back to base is theoretically, and it actually is, a cut to what spending had been.
What does that mean, going back to base?
Going back to base means you go back to the base budget of the following, of the prior budget. So funding at education, funding special education, there was zero child care, there's no increases for anything, and there's a tremendous amount of temporary positions that are not made permanent by the Republicans, so we would have lost a lot of that. There's a lot of programs that are stacked on a temporary basis. So all of that gets stripped off. So we not only would not have moved forward, we would have moved backwards. And okay, there were literally Republican senators voting for that. That's what they wanted.
How would they do that?
By just not.
Why would they do that?
Again, they have the majority. So if they can't pass a budget, if we couldn't pass a budget on time, that's what would happen. It's a reversion back to the base.
To the last budget.
And then again, all of the excess temporary stuff gets pulled off. So it's worse than going. It's worse than holding status quo. It's backwards from there. That was the worst option.
Yeah.
The second worst option would have been accepting the Republican JFC budget, because the Republican JFC budget had, what, 37 and 39 for special education. You know, they didn't want to do any special education.
Why not special education? Well, 37 and 39.
The 37% would be the reimbursement, some certain.
Oh, okay.
Which, again, we all know that we want some sufficient so that the schools can actually count on and bank on what's coming in. Doesn't happen.
Yep.
Okay. So they were going to give 37 and 39 on special education. They didn't want to do any child care whatsoever. We just know this to be true. The governor, the Republicans' version of things is not at all where the Democratic philosophy stands. That's the second worst option. Then you have where, in essence, the governor had gotten to in negotiations, which was, I think, a little bit ahead of that, and the child care came into play. And childcare was a big deal. And again, I know that there's disappointment in this budget. There's no question that we on the Democratic side believe in the need to facilitate our childcare programs across the state. Childcare Counts has kept it afloat. Governor's was a hard must have it in there in the negotiations. And I think he actually did a great job. The disappointment is that it doesn't cover the full budget. Yep, I know. Because they wanted zero. They wanted none. So the governor negotiated to cover the first year the way that we knew that it would work. He did get a tremendous increase in the SHARES reimbursement rate from 50 up to 75%, which is a big deal, especially for the lower income communities. So in essence, the daycare providers can afford to take those kids in.
Yep.
But he had to give up. Again, compromise means you have to let. The Republican philosophy is that we shouldn't be throwing money at childcare. We should be making it easier to be in childcare. A compromise means you had to give them a shot. So this budget on child care says we're going to basically extend child care counts-ish, whatever they want to call it, for a year. Meanwhile, the Gobin bills, or the Republican versions of let's fix child care our way, were put in for the first year. So in essence, the Republicans are going to have a chance to validate that that program helps or works, or they won't. And at the end of that 1 year, we're going to either have to do a budget amendment that, or an amended budget that then takes care of child care, or we will have a functioning system, or perhaps a combination of the two, which is not a bad idea. But the idea that we got nothing is not true, because nothing would have been the Republicans winning, giving nothing to child care, and everything would have crashed and burned. So 50% of that, of 100%, is a pretty good number. And again, now there's more work to be done, and we have to work together to make that happen.
Yeah, we're talking with Senator Chris Dasser-Elfheim. I want to drill down a little bit on that, just to kind of clear things up for people, because that's a big topic here on the other end of the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are sitting down here with Senator Chris Dasser-Elfheim. You know, it's interesting. We were talking on the other side about child care and, funding for for all of that in the budget. And it just, you know, for a party that really wants kids to be born, darn it, they sure don't really feel like they need to be taken care of a ton after that happens.
Yeah.
So, because this is something that I feel like I'm a pretty well-read person. How does this whole thing work? Where were we and where did it go to?
So child care accounts involved a lot of direct payments to the child care providers. And the Republicans' argument has been for years that they could fix it through lessening the regulations. And I will say that some of my CCRs, the organizations that help in the child care industry, said that there is some validity to that.
Yes,
you know,
sure.
There's some. Now, again, when the Republicans came back, one of the things that I know the child care people are not happy about is the new ratios of 1-7, meaning one instructor per pupil.
Yep.
And in some cases, it had been 1-4, and the Republicans came in hard. They were a firm was not going to change at 1-7. Now, I think that every person on the planet that works in childcare knows that a 1-7 ratio is way too big. That's too many kids. I mean, just imagine trying to wrangle that. Sorry. Again, Senator Hesselbein, who worked in childcare in college, was at that table saying, "You do not understand. You do not understand how difficult that is." The challenge that we ran up against is if you look to Minnesota, our very liberal, progressive neighbor, they have a 1-7 ratio.
Yeah, it's hard to make that argument.
It's hard to fight against something. Now, the rest of the story, which matters, is that Minnesota doesn't use it. There's really nobody using a 1-7 ratio. Mm. But it is in their law. Therefore, we had a hard time trying to get off of that. So could you argue? I think there are some reasons, you know, in the rural communities, they now are allowing 2 teachers instead of 1. Is that a big deal? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's some reality. There's I think about $2 million worth of grant money involved for nonprofits and I want to say Wonder Schools, which is an organization that works to increase the people, basically recruits people into the child care industry that has had some success across the country. That was part of the Govan bills, so that was agreed to. So again, if we stand on opposite sides and the Democrats feel that the only way to fix this is a mimic of the child care accounts, and the Republicans stand on one side and saying, no, that's not right, we're not going to give any money, we want to do it this way, this budget, and again, to the governor's credit, says, all right, we don't believe it, but we're going to give you a year to prove it.
Yeah.
So that was the compromise.
So what happens in a year?
What happens in a year is either the programs that the Republicans fought for are effective.
How would they know?
Well, I think that the industry should be able to tell us. I think the industry will know, are they recruiting more people? Are there more spots available?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the data will be fairly easy to read. Have these programs been beneficial or not? Have they been beneficial to a degree? So perhaps we can offset that. But the reality is, I think that everyone should be hoping for success.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Everybody should be hoping for success for the sake of the kids, for the sake of the providers, for the sake of the business community, for the sake of the families, for everybody. So, again, 1 year from now, after all of these programs are up and running that we've invested in that are, again, from the Republican perspective are supposed to fix it, either they're going to have helped or not. And then if not, if the problem is not solved, which is the expectation from the Democrats, then there's going to have to be a remedy, which means we're going to have to go to an amended, you know, to amend the budget, which is not uncommon.
Right.
It's not uncommon. Again, the thing we can't do, in my opinion, is throw a fit to the fact that nothing was done. That's not true. It is a Republican-controlled legislature.
Right.
With a governor and a Democratic Party that wants desperately to do the right thing. And
what do you mean you
kids.
Didn't get a $15 an hour minimum wage in universal health care? Right. What?
I was at a group the other night and I started the conversation with, we asked for everything you would have wanted us to ask for. We asked hard for everything. Yeah. Everything that you would have wanted in that budget, the governor asked for and the Democratic caucus asked for. Everything you would have wanted, we fought hard for. And when we got hard no's, we got hard no's.
Yeah.
And in the end, we got added in. We got the special education up to 42 and 45.
Yeah.
Still some certain, still not enough, still not some sufficient, still not 60%. But in what budget, if the governor comes in at a 60% ratio and the Republicans want none,
right?
You know, they're currently sitting at 30. What's the compromise between 60 and 30?
Right.
45. Right. That's where we landed.
Right.
Right. And again, in a Republican controlled legislature.
That's pretty good.
We got halfway through the increase. So to say it was a minuscule increase, I think is not,
it's not fair.
It's not fair because it's a 50% right. increase over where it was.
Right. And over where the party that is in the majority wants it
right.
to be.
Right. Right. It's not enough. I get that. There must be more. We should be disappointed that we are still not taking care of our schools the way we need to. We should be.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between saying we're still not there and saying, oh, we actually have moved forward in the right direction for mm-hmm. the first time. For the first yeah. time in over a decade, we have positive movement and positive investments. And now look where we can be. I look at yeah. it as this is the last crappy budget that we have to sign. The last yeah. one.
Right.
Because we will be in charge. If we continue, if the Democrats continue working as hard and as tirelessly as they have, and God bless the volunteers out there right. knocking on doors and making phone calls, they got us to right. this point, and we are one step away from actually being in charge.
Right.
And then all of those philosophies that we want to see, now we're in charge. Where's the money coming from is the question on the Republican side. Well, maybe we can look at all those billions of dollars of subsidies that are going out behind our backs to places that don't need them. And we yeah. can reshuffle the system to make sure that we can indeed take care of these kids.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, yeah, there's so many areas that we need to improve on, from the bloated prison population that we have to, right. oh my God, there's so much. We're talking with State Senator Kristen Dassler-Alfheim. This is a great discussion. We're going to talk next about kind of where things sit. Where does the Democratic Party need to go? Where do we need to be looking for, you know, and how can this budget conversation guide where our politics go in 2026? Because holy crap, midterms are coming.
Ooh.
Oh, you got the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train.
We got a duet here on the Rational Revolution.
My jeans.
Yes. We've got the second singer you hear there is the sweet sound of State Senator
Rose
Kristen Dassler-Alfheim.
All the way to New Orleans.
Bam, bam, bam. All right, so thanks for hanging out. You know, if you like what you heard, who wouldn't? You can download this episode and all the episodes, civicmedia.us. Download our app. You can wherever podcasts are, you can listen as many times as you want. Hit that stuff on repeat. One of the things I want to talk about is kind of where we are politically. Where does everything go? And you said something in the discussion last segment about, you know, we all want to make sure that, you know, we do the right thing. And I was like, yeah, but, and I the one thing that I always, when I was a Republican chairman, I started any discussion with people that I was talking to about why do we compromise? We all want a good thing to happen. We all want the success of the population. We all want this to succeed. We all want us to be okay. And when, you know, you said that about, well, you know, we do want this to be successful. We're talking about this program. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're almost at a point where it's like, I don't know if they want that program to be successful, because then if it's not, it goes away.
Well, I'm not the Republicans, right?
Right.
But I would say that Republicans in general don't like the idea of throwing money at industries that they don't, or industries that don't support them.
Right.
Because you can't say that a Republican doesn't believe in subsidizing industry. They check out WMC.
Right.
WMC, I mean, the billions of dollars that are sent in subsidies to tremendously successful industry. And God bless our businesses, right? I mean,
I'm a capitalist.
We're the Fox
I'm a business owner.
I mean, we need our mutual success in our community. So I'm 100%. Not saying that we should be hurting anything, but there are plenty of dollars that are going to subsidies on things that are not childcare.
Right.
So philosophically, it's hypocritical of the Republican Party to say, nope, we shouldn't have to give money to that. You give money to everything. There's money in industry. There's money in commerce all the time.
Right.
For hundreds of years, you've done that. So it's hypocritical to say they don't think that stimulating that industry is a good idea. You just don't think they deserve it. Acknowledge it.
Right.
You don't think childcare providers are worth sending any taxpayer dollars to. Be honest about it.
Right.
Be honest about it. And if you think that the industry can fix itself and the way you want to help is by offering these resources, okay, you've now come to an agreement that you're going to be able to put your money where your mouth is. And then fine, let's look at the data. And again, I don't think everything is right or wrong from either side. I do think that there is something to be said for looking at situations. Again, in the rural area, the fact that in a family situation, you could only have one where the option could be two, mm-hmm. I think that's actually a reasonable solution. Again, first and foremost, kids are taken care of and getting what they need to.
Yeah.
But I think that there is some realistic compromise that could be done. And we must, in the end, agree that not having a childcare system is devastating.
Yeah,
it's 100%. Devastating Absolutely. For the economy and for families in this world, in addition to the business owners that own childcare businesses.
Right.
It's not just, this is not about bailing out an industry. This is about keeping an industry whole for the good of the entire state.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so where politically with all of this, this is kind of setting up. It's a roadmap to 2026.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to ask you to respond to this because I don't respond. But our political director.
What if I want to?
If you if you want to, I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole if I had Senator in front of my name. But our political director, Dan Schaefer, wrote an article famously where he said that Tony Evers should not.
Not going to comment on that.
I wouldn't comment on that. And I love Governor Evers. I would love to have him on the show. I wouldn't ask him about this, but I would love to talk to him about what it's been like to try to do the best you can in the face of such headwinds from the Republican Party. And I think, you know, the midterms coming up, what an amazing, if I was Tony Evers and I spent the last 8 years getting my teeth kicked in, hell yeah, I'd want a shot at now I can leave a legacy of something that is the right thing to do. Man, that's a tough decision. But where do you think, the governor aside, what is this set up for the legislature?
Well, I'm just going to pass on that whole governor thing, as you can imagine.
Well, because we're both fans of Tony Evers.
I think, you know, and I've been in close proximity to him. I think that he has done a truly, truly honorable job in a horrible situation.
Oh, my God.
And I will say, as I was knocking on doors during the campaign, I always knocked on moderate doors.
It's
I was
wildly
never on,
popular.
Wildly popular in the Democratic Party without question. But I will say that there were an awful lot of moderate Republicans that when we came down to a conversation between, you know, Evers and Michaels, we would have a great conversation. And I said, the one thing that I will tell you and you should believe is that he is an honorable man.
Yes.
There is not a selfish bone in his body. And every time that I had that conversation, the moderate Republican would nod their head.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that what he has done is shown that, one, it is you can't be perfect in a situation when you're not in control.
Right.
And I think that his base understands that.
Right.
I think that philosophy really has to kind of be used in a broader sense when it comes to the overall caucus, because we realistically are doing the very best we can in a bad situation.
Right.
Now, what could he do with the majority in the Senate Democrat? What could he do with the majority? I think that the entire world changes for the governor, or for whomever else it is, as long as they're blue, but for the people of Wisconsin and the Democratic Party, taking the advantage of those maps and finally getting at least one house, God bless us too, but one house having the majority changes the world. And now instead of salvaging or crash landing a budget without anybody, you know, losing it. Now we actually have the opportunity to fly the plane. So we have the opportunity to land the plane, not crash landing safely.
Right. So as we're sitting down here with Senator Chris Desler-Alfheim, what does it take to get there? What message has to get out? Where on the Peggy Noonan yardstick do we have to be? Do we have to have people that are way on the extreme? Do we have to have people that are moderates? What gets that majority that is not a majority for a couple of years? What gets the majority that is lasting, that the people of Wisconsin can say, I do trust the Democratic Party. I do trust their people to do the right things.
I think that, again, on the doors, the number one thing I heard, and yes, education, and yes, childcare, mm-hmm. but really the number one thing I heard in the moderates of the world, which were red, blue leaning, kind
we're
of purple one
state,
side
like
or the
your
other,
shirt.
Every one of them said, why can't you just work together?
Right.
And what allows government work together is one balanced government, which means properly mapped out, right? So balanced government is good government, is productive government. But also having the leadership of the party not insist on all or nothing. So the rule of 17 in the Republican Senate caucus means they never bring anything to the floor unless they have 17 votes because they never want to rely on a Democrat to vote. So we go up there and we give good speeches. We can do all these things. We can submit bills all day long. And it doesn't matter because it's either not going to get a hearing. That's a leadership decision.
That's crap.
It's not going to get
a hearing.
Oh my
God, is that
or
dumb?
It's never going to come to the floor because they don't have 17 votes.
Right.
So the leadership, Diane Hesselbein, again, coming out of this caucus saying, hey, we're going to have a rule that says, you know, if we believe as eight, so eight is more than 50% of the caucus believe it's the right choice to move forward, then we will move forward. But if we don't have eight, we won't. A rule of eight is holding your caucus together with allowing voices and compromise to take place. That's leadership. That is leadership. And if you have the leadership of the Senate caucus, who, in my opinion, has just proven the fact that they are ready to lead this state, because we are proving the fact that we are, one, going to negotiate the best we can for people. We have people's minds in first, and we are willing to not stand on the edge and wait for perfection. And I respect the hell out of the people that are standing on the edge saying no.
Yeah.
We should just say no. I get it, because what you want is the full solution. Mm-hmm. That is not the world we live in.
Right.
So I expect them to continue standing there. I expect them to continue demanding more.
Yeah.
And then it is the pragmatic portion of each caucus that has to say, okay, I believe in what you're saying. If you want 10 steps, let's go 4 and prove that it works so that we can take steps 5 and 6 in the future. We have to be able to get back to that. If we stand on the grounds of far right and far left and just stand there and yell at each other, we get nowhere.
Right.
That is not what the people of Wisconsin want, period.
No, and I think right now I shouldn't say the entire, I don't want to speak in entireties, but the majority of the Republican Party is in an extreme position. You look at the leaders.
That's where they have decided to be right now.
Correct. Yes.
Do I believe that all Republicans are that? No, I don't.
No, you look at people like Kitchens and all that.
Yeah, and I think that there were very good statesmen. There are very good rational Republicans. And God bless them. Both parties have to be there.
Yeah.
If the, you know, we as a Democratic Party, we are absolutely people first. That is the bottom line. But there is a rational edge to that says we can't necessarily afford to do everything we want right now.
Right.
That is the value of the two-party system.
Right.
It's trying to keep, again, with proper maps, we can keep it in balance to say, you're right, that's a good idea. We can't quite give it all. We can't do it 100%, but we can move towards that.
Yeah.
That's what balanced government should be
doing. It would be interesting to see what Wisconsin is like with Minority Leader Robin Voss.
You know, Robin's been around a long time, but I will say he's the one that finally came to the table. He's the that had to help get it done. And I still feel bad. Again, maps matter.
That's so conflicting.
I know. I'm not giving him a pat on the back, but
because he was the architect of all this.
He absolutely, true. So we shouldn't be giving him any credit, but he's the one that was actually in the negotiating table. He was the one with all the words, everything that Diane Hesselbein got included into this, this budget, this not great budget. Everything that is in there, the almost $1 billion in capital projects for UW, the bridges, the MSP payments, all of those things were negotiated by Diane with Robin.
That's crazy.
Robin is the one that had to do it. Senator Lemieux didn't have a whole lot of voice. It was his caucus that was having trouble. So he's the one that showed up, and Voss is the one that made it happen. And we talked on the way back from the break, there was an idea, this whole timeline with July 4th and the Trump budget. We can talk about that a little bit as well. But there was a sense of urgency to make sure that we collected the Medicaid cap increase. We had been at, I think, 1.5 and we went up to 6%. And that was a big deal. And it wasn't just for the hospitals. Number one, keeping hospitals healthy does matter.
Yeah.
We had to kick back to make sure no hospital was kicked in the teeth, because there were some, there were lots of winners and a couple of losers. So we had to make sure there were no losers. And then the state collected, they refer to it as the skim. The state received the rest of that to go directly towards our Medicaid budget. Missing out on that opportunity would have been massive in a negative way. So again, the Robin Voss pushed to accept an increase in Medicaid funding for the hospitals, and why we wouldn't now go for Medicaid, going to the full Medicaid program. How do you say yes to, how do you say yes to expanding Medicaid for the hospitals and not say yes to expanding it for people in general?
You say yes, that but. Is,
again, hypocrisy at its best.
Right? That's wild. I don't, I don't understand some of that stuff and how you can justify that.
No.
You know, it's, that doesn't make a ton of sense. But normally I have a Mark's Musings segment. I'm going to have you stick around because this is going to be good.
Oh boy.
Yes. We're not going to talk politics. We're going to talk big picture stuff. Take it away, Senator Chris Dasser Elfheim.
I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time. I was holding Bobby's hand mine. We sing every song to drive a new.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Well, today we are answering the question, who sings it better, Janis Joplin or Senator Chris Dasser Elfheim? I think it's it could be debated.
I'm going to have a karaoke fundraiser, y'all.
Right on.
For X amount of dollars, you can get me to sing damn near anything.
All right. Very good. Very good. So lately, you know, it's been interesting. I've been more introspective than most times. My wife had her grandmother pass away. Who she was very close with, my 8-year-old son, or he's now 8, you know, and you know, as I'm getting older, I'm seeing the passage of time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it does, I tell my son every day, stop it, stop growing, stop getting so old. And I look at, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing, from work to politics and all of that. And I wanted to ask people who have an influence in my life and who I look up to, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And what is your outlook as you have more years behind, you know?
Yeah.
And so why do you do all of this?
I think it's a good question. And I'll share an answer that applies to both my business career and politics. Uh-huh. When my daughter was about, I don't know, 7. She came home from school and had one of those handwritten Mother's Day cards. And it said, I love my mom because she gets me to meetings early. So we always get a good seat. I love my mom because she makes spaghetti. My mom goes to work every day and she has to fill in the line. And her answer was, helps people. Mm. In, you know, the 5 years that I'd been in the business that I chose, all she heard when I came home is I helped this lady do that, or help that guy do that, or help this and this and this. So my entire career, my goal has been to try and solve problems, to make someone's situation better than when I found it. And then my philosophy in business for all this time. And now stepping into politics, it's the same thing. Mm. You know, when I said yes to this whole thing, whether it was city council, whether it was advocacy, whether it was the Senate position, I didn't say yes because I knew I was not up to date on every one of the issues that we are talking about today. I was complacent. I was comfortable. And I will acknowledge that forever. But the more I learned, the more I realized that what was needed in politics was a civilized voice who was capable of listening to all of the factors, who wanted to make it better, who wanted to solve things. I'm here. I am here in politics not because I was mad about one thing or another. It was because I knew that I had the skill set to be effective and to get all of the information of every issue, want to know the entire conversation, and then help people work through to find a solution. That's who I am as a business person. That's who I am as a politician, which I don't enjoy the word. But I am a problem solver and a communicator and a team builder. So in the world, in the dynamics of politics that we have today, we must have those that are standing on the edges and screaming for what they believe is right. I get that. I respect that. But we also have to have the statesmen and the stateswomen of our politics come in and say, I hear you. And I also hear that person that's on the polar opposite. And I have to find a little bit of empathy on both sides to say, okay, but we may disagree 89% of it. But I hear a little bit of reality in that story, and let's blend that into the solution. That is why I'm here. I want to do good. I want to solve problems. And I think in this dynamic that we're in today, which is an unhealthy one, in my opinion, in politics, someone like me is trying to hold an even keel and work through things together.
Nice. When I look at, you know, I'm a dad, and I've got 12, 8, and 4. I don't know what the future is like. You know, like right now, my 8-year-old, I'll say, and my 4-year-old, my 12-year-old doesn't do this much anymore, but they'll come and sit on my lap and they love to rock and all of that. And I had a moment yesterday where I was like, I love this, but my son is leaving these little kernels that like he's ready to not, you know, do that. And I'm terrified for that.
Oh, that's reality.
What happens?
They just get big. You know? I mean, I always say I've been raising teenagers for 30 plus years, 30 years, you know, modern family. And it's a growing, and again, you have to, instead of focusing on the fear of losing it, you have to focus on the joy of watching it and watch to see, you know, who they become and where they go. And as we've been impactful over the years, you start to see those lessons in how they live. And again, focus on the joy, not the fear. Because what you have with them, you're never going to lose what you've had. But think how much you have to look forward to and what's to come.
That's true. And you know, I'm so grateful for that time, but it's like, I don't know what the great unknown is.
You can't. You know, again, I am not a person that focuses on things that are out of my control. I take as much control as I can to guide, to steer, to be. And then the rest of it, we have to have faith that humanity will come around and do the right thing, which I think sometimes we are losing faith in. I know many are, but I'm not. I will be the eternal optimist that, with all of the information, most people are rational people that want to make a good choice with all of the information.
Yes.
And decisions are made often on limited information. And oftentimes those decisions and opinions are formed loudly on limited information. Yeah. So I have faith in a conversation that if someone is willing to hear the rest of the story, that they're willing to find that civilized answer and move forward. And I have faith the country will do that. The state of Wisconsin will do that. And I sure as hell hope the Fox Valley continues to do that.
Well, you know, I think that if we have people like yourself in the state Senate or in higher offices, God willing, drop that little nugget.
Settle down. It's been 6 months.
I know. Well, yeah, whatever. You got the rational revolution. Thank you, Chris Delsler-Alfheim, for your time today and your friendship and all of that. It's so much appreciated. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Civic Media.
Don't forget to download the app.
Dang right. Download the app. Yes. Thanks. You can take the talk show host out of the woman. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. See ya.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.